Good afternoon. This is Co-op Radio CFRO FM at 102.7 on the FM band and Co-op Radio for Greater Vancouver, Vancouver Island. And we are heard on cable frequencies throughout the Lower Mainland, Central Interior, and the Okanagan Valley. I'm Croft Woodruff, and you are listening now to Dynamic Health. And, of course, the time is just coming up to 2 minutes after one in the afternoon of August the 9th. And, of course, we certainly welcome your participation. And the number to call is 604-684-7561. My apologies for leaving you with some reruns for the past couple of programs, but I have retired from the retail vitamin business and now working as a consultant and as well as doing consulting for not only private citizens but also for health professionals who are interested in what I do. And if you have any information or any concern or want any information, you can contact me at 604-421-1951. And that is the phone number that you can reach me at during business hours, certainly Monday through Thursdays for the time being. Well, now, lots of things been going on. And, of course, if you heard the just previous program with David Suzuki and the crime of genetic engineering that is being inflicted on Canadians, for the most part, I guess unknown to them, by their own government, their own politicians, and their own captains of industry. It's just amazing that they can get away with it. And we keep voting for these kinds of governments year after year and without any regard to the consequences of what's coming down the pipe. And without repeating what Dr. Suzuki had to say, the very fact that we now have weeds that are immune to three brands or different types of herbicide should give us pause for thought. Because when farmers can use herbicides indiscriminately to get rid of the weeds, these herbicides, they are known carcinogens, they are in the water table, they're affecting aquatic as well as plant life, and sooner or later the contamination is going to be in the food chain and we will all pay a price for it. And certainly all the years we've been hearing from the cancer industry about, you know, a cure is just around the corner, the progress in cancer research has actually been no better than that this date of 2006 as opposed to what was achieved by the year 1969. There virtually has been no progress. Even the successes concerning childhood cancers have proven to be an illusion, since those who have survived childhood cancers are now developing secondary cancers that can be directly attributed to the type of treatments of chemotherapy and radiation that they were subjected to in their childhood. These adults now are, you could say, victims of a disease twice. And, of course, there's one big cancer treatment that's been on the news in recent months, and it's been around in the United States for a few years, but it got a big write-up and big promise, Erbitux it's called, and it costs $2,400 a week for a treatment. This is a treatment for breast cancer, and of course the studies now show that it does not extend life any longer. In fact, there's just no difference in life extension with or without this drug, but it does reduce tumors. And so our research-challenged media has gone ahead and trumpeted away of the wonders of this great treatment, and governments have been forced to listen to people who get on the bandwagon. Oh, we've got to have this. We've got to have this. $2,400 a week. It reduces tumors, but it doesn't improve the quality of life, nor does it extend life. And that is the state of cancer treatment. It's just incredible, absolutely incredible that we're getting this sort of hype for these patentable, highly profitable, but virtually useless cancer drugs. And it just goes on and on. We've heard about tamoxifen. It's a failure. We've heard of Taxol, the synthetic version of the extract from the yew tree, and it's not working either. Maybe because it's a synthetic version instead of the natural occurring molecule. Because, you know, nature is something you can't fool around with without paying a penalty. And we know from our experience that synthetic is not the same as natural. This has been shown to be true in the case of vitamins like vitamin E, like vitamin D, because there are several forms of vitamin D, but vitamin D3 is the natural form of the molecule. Vitamin D2 is a synthetic version, and it is toxic. Unlike vitamin D3, vitamin D2 drives lead into the bones, and it drives magnesium out of the bones, and on top of all of that, it helps to lay calcification and cholesterol into the walls of the arteries. So who needs it? And then, of course, we have other things that they're trying to use in the treatment of, or prevention of osteoporosis, these highly advertised drugs, Diderol, I think it is, and Fosamax. And we're finding out that these are actually causing bone death. Certainly, when you take them, you have to stand for about 30 minutes unless you want to have your esophagus eaten out. This is a sort of medical breakthroughs that we're being sold, really, a bill of goods on. In any case, I invite your participation, 604-684-7561, and we will go to the phone lines shortly. If you're waiting, please be patient, and I'll go to the lines in a minute. But right now, there is an AIDS conference going on in Toronto, and I've been looking at some of the write-up about it in the Globe and Mail. And if you could get hold of yesterday's paper, there's an excellent letter to the editor by David Crow, who is with an information group on AIDS. I forget the exact name, but they're based in Alberta. And this man really has it down to a science. I was looking at an article by Lisa Priest, who is one of the Globe and Mail's reporters.
Alicia.
It's Alicia. They had Lisa on the byline, but regardless, the information was rather interesting insofar as she's talking about HIV and talking about virus. What virus? They haven't got a vaccine, and of course you can't have a vaccine without a virus. In fact, that's why nobody's received a Nobel Prize for discovering the HIV alleged virus. And nobody has won a Nobel Prize for developing a vaccine that works. In fact, what vaccines that have been developed have actually caused serious problems and prevented nothing. And not only that, the studies that they developed were highly rigged, and still they couldn't get the kind of results that they were hoping to get. This is the kind of pseudoscience that is going on in the medical profession. So you look at these HIV tests, and we're told that 58,000 Canadians are HIV positive. Really? Well, when you look at the different HIV tests, they are so unreliable. They can vary from sample to sample, from month to month. It can vary from hospital to hospital or lab to lab. And it can be different in North America as opposed to what's going on in Europe. And the result is a lot of people going around who think they're HIV positive, and they're not. And they're allowing themselves to be subjected to treatments when they are symptom-free, but they're still allowing themselves to be subjected to treatments of what we call anti-neoplastins. These are powerful drugs like AZT that destroy the nucleus of the cell, and in fact, they kill the cell, they kill life. If you ever read the label, and I don't think there's a reporter out there. I would challenge any reporter out there that might just be listening to this program, and I doubt very much that there are any, I find that in general the press is so research challenged on this issue, it's absolutely pathetic. But the AZT, for instance, right on the label, it admits that it's a bone marrow suppressant. Anything that suppresses bone marrow is immunosuppressive. In other words, they're treating the so-called immunosuppressive disease with an immunosuppressant. Does that make any sense? And especially when we're told, at least the handlers of this drug and applying it to their patients, do not inhale, wear gloves, do not get on your skin, and it's got a skull and crossbones on the label, and it says it must be stored at 0 degrees Celsius. This is a kind of business that they are using to treat people with presumably an immune deficiency disease. They are using drugs that actually destroy the immune system. Does that make any sense? What kind of logic is this? And of course, as I said before, no virus, no vaccine, no Nobel Prize. And yet we have a media out there that's selling this business that there is a virus when there has no evidence. And you might say, oh yeah, well I've seen a picture of it in the newspaper and the Daily Telegraph had one. Yeah, except for one thing. It was a computerized version of what some artist concept of what this virus might look like. Almost something like some kind of a satellite with dishes and for receptors and so on and so forth. When in fact what it means is that it's a figment of some artist's imagination. And certainly, right as it says now, HIV virus is a figment of the media's imagination. And of course, the trouble with our media is research challenged. And they don't want to talk about this. They don't want to hear about it. I send out emails to different media types, and they don't want to hear from me. So, and it's not that I'm bombarding them with dozens of emails a day or dozens of emails a month or dozens of emails a year. They might hear from me once, two, maybe three or four times at the most, and that's it, because I realize that I'm just whistling in the wind. I'm Croft Woodruff. The program is Dynamic Health, and this is CFRO-FM at 102.7 FM on the dial. And, of course, it is 15 after 1, and we do invite your calls at 604-684-7561. Something else that's been in the news lately is a young man by the name of Cherix in Virginia. He's a teen, and he's come down with a cancer, and his parents and the boy himself did not like the effects of the chemotherapy that was offered him, and so they opted for alternate therapies. As soon as the doctors found out that he was going to refuse therapy, the doctors went to the social services, and the next thing we know, the boy's family are faced with social service workers and the police at the door, and the judge has ordered that he has to undergo therapy, a therapy that is more devastating probably in its effects than the condition of the disease itself. Well, a senior court now has overruled that, and apparently the family are seeking the Hoxie cancer therapy, and that is something that is worth looking into, because that's been around for a long, long time, and there was quite a controversy about it in the 1950s and 60s, and every once in a while it surfaces again. But the clinic, by the way, after all these years, is still operating in Mexico, and there are many people who testify, oh yes, anecdotal it may be, but they testify to the fact that they were given up as terminal, and yet when they went to the clinic, everything was turned around. And basically, it's herbal treatments. Let's go to the lines. Line one, you're on the air. Line two, that's you. Sorry, got a little bit of problem. Try again. Hello, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Sorry, thank you.
I've made the observation some time ago. We all say that there's so much illness that the medical plan can't keep up with it, etc., etc. I made the observation a long time ago that the cause of much of the physical health breakdown is a direct result of government policy. I don't care whether it's fluoridation that the government promotes, or if it's food irradiation that the government promotes, or if it's genetic engineering, where the government has abdicated its role of protecting the public and is basically a business promoter, or whether it is mandatory medication, as you just mentioned, or whether it is vaccines that are not biologically sound because the immune system of new infants is not mature, and they violate the vaccinations violate the basic premise that you do not shoot toxic chemicals like aluminum hydroxide and formaldehyde and mercury and a whole lot of other things directly into the bloodstream of anyone, leave alone a new infant.
Caller.
And so
caller.
On and on.
Hey,
know,
caller.
Yeah.
Just think of this with regard to the hepatitis B vaccine that they're inflicting on innocent newborn babies, since they can't persuade the ones who are at risk for hepatitis B to accept the vaccine, such as intravenous drug users and people who are living a rather unfortunate existence in terms of diet, nutrition, and living conditions that would make them susceptible to hepatitis B, is the fact that the same amount of mercury that is in what the child is getting is in the same proportion what an adult is getting. And the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency says that the amount of mercury in that shot is too much for an adult male, never mind a newborn infant. This is the incompetence of our own medical profession.
It's not incompetence. It's a fact that the government has abdicated its role of protecting the population.
Abdicated or not, it's still the responsible. It's still the responsibility of the medical profession to be professional. You don't give a child the same dose of mercury that you would give to an adult. It's as simple, not to mention what you said, the aluminum hydroxide and the formaldehyde. It just doesn't make any sense. And of course, foreign proteins being introduced into a body that essentially has an immature or not developed immune system at all. It's just horrific. And so these people, it starts at the bottom.
Well, I'd like to draw attention to one specific thing, because I hear the ads on CKNW all the time, and that is of the rheumatoid arthritis incident in children now being 1 in 1,000. I dealt with several rheumatoid arthritic children whose rheumatoid arthritis was provable to be the direct result of immune response to vaccination.
So, especially the measles vaccine.
Well, I'm not sure exactly which one it was.
Yeah, it's the measles vaccine.
Within 3 weeks of vaccination, this child...
Yeah. The measles vaccine is the one that is responsible. This has been known for at least 3 decades now.
I mean, if they want to stop the rheumatoid arthritis epidemic in children, all they have to do is basically to stop the infant vaccine program. And this all over again, the explosion in disease or illness, okay, not necessarily infectious disease, but health breakdown, is a direct result of aberrant government policy, where the government basically has become nothing more than the arm of an industry. Or
well, how about this, caller? We have this international conference on AIDS going on this week in Toronto, and it's co-chaired by Dr. Mark Weinberg of McGill University. And this man has said that anybody who disputes the HIV-AIDS hypothesis, in other words, that the AIDS is caused by a virus that nobody has yet been able to identify, isolate, and then as a consequence, develop a vaccine that would work. And he says that anybody who disputes this hypothesis, like someone like myself, then they should be put in jail. I'm not finished. What does that tell you? What does that tell you about the state of mind of the medical profession? This is the sort of thing that we saw during the Second World War in these Nazi death camps.
Oh, the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah, mass madness is what it is. And where is our media? The Vancouver Sun, the Vancouver Province, the Globe and Mail, the Toronto Star, CanWest, which controls most of these newspapers with the exception of the latter two. Why aren't they standing for, hey, nobody should be put in jail just because they think differently medical opinion.
Well, once the earth is flat, it must never be found to be round, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But getting back to, if one person has meningitis, which, by the way, is curable, okay, dies of meningitis or a vaccine-induced polio or whatever, the media goes absolutely crazy. I have never heard one single mention of the fact that within the very first few years of the hepatitis being introduced to newborn infants in the United States, the CDC recorded over 450 infant deaths as a direct result of that vaccine. Nobody says a word.
Yeah, well, there you are.
And so if you had 460 deaths from meningitis, the whole country would be on fire. You have 450 deaths as a result of, in a few short years, there have been many more since then, from hepatitis B vaccine, and there is a complete lid on the information.
Well, how about the vaccine adverse events reporting system, which they have in the United States and is mandatory and was instituted in 1987. And since then, well over $1 billion have been paid out for injuries and death caused by vaccinations. One of the most recent ones was within the last month or so, when a 7-year-old boy in, either Missouri or Kansas, as it was reported in Kansas City Star, it was reported that this boy received a settlement of $14 million because the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine turned him into a quadriplegic. Now, it's funny, we never heard about that in Canada, did we?
Apparently the only reportable vaccine reaction is if the child stops to breathe. And that isn't even true, because the SID deaths, which are in large measure a vaccine death, are not reported as vaccine deaths, they're reported as SIDs.
Yeah.
Of no known cause.
Yeah, and of course, the very thing that is the chief suspect, they won't look at. And we're looking at several cases, some 25 cases in all, in the United Kingdom, where parents had been convicted of murdering their children. It had to be overturned because, in fact, the evidence was tainted by one particular, what you would call, the health examiner, one who does the autopsies and determines the cause of death, and it turns out that virtually every one of these deaths was vaccine related, and the cases had to be overturned, and the parents were exonerated. One of the most flagrant parts of this case, or instance of these cases, was this woman. She was an attorney. In fact, I think she was a Crown prosecutor, and she was accused of having murdered two of her babies. And of course, it was the vaccine-related deaths that was responsible. But, and then of course, even if you are acquitted and without question, you still have that stigma of having been charged and convicted anyways, even if you've been exonerated.
For those who are see nothing wrong with mandatory medication, may I point out that this wolf in sheep's clothing is the most dangerous assault on civil liberties that you can have, because mandatory medication means mandatory intrusion and taking over of the body, and there is nothing more dangerous and nothing that we should basically fight against more than the concept that the state or anyone else can mandate medication.
Well, when you have a situation when social workers can be at your doorstep with the sheriff's deputies or the RCMP to take your child away to be forcibly medicated because you don't like the protocol that the doctors are offering because of the horrendous side effects, and that, in fact, the treatment is probably just a seesaw between who's going to win out, the undertaker or the toxicologist, then you know that we are no longer in a democratic society. This has happened in Canada. There was a case in Saskatchewan several years ago that got some prominence, and although the youngsters succumbed to the disease in the end, at least it wasn't a horrible ending as it would have been had he been allowed to be subjected to the horrible effects of the approved treatments. Anyways, caller, I want to thank you very much for joining the call, and we have another line open now at 604-684-7561. We have two lines open at 604-684-7561. If you would like to participate in the program, please take advantage of the opportunity. And if you got a question, a comment, you want to take issue with anything that has come up over the last 25 minutes or so, this is your opportunity, because this is Co-op Radio, radio for the people. My goodness, that sounds communistic, doesn't it? In any case, we have a caller on line one. Go ahead.
Hello, Cross. Thanks for accepting my call.
You're welcome.
And I just had two points. This Dr. Brian Day, who's running to be president of the Canadian Medical Association, who wanted Medicare to be repealed, now he's changed the tune of his song, and he's a staunch supporter of private for-profit clinics, et cetera, the U.S. system, and on it goes. And at last now he's got an opponent. But I'm neither psychic nor a fortune teller, but I can safely presume that Dr. Brian Day will win the so-called election nowadays with all this electronic. And I know for a fact, I've checked with three IBM engineers, that the system can be rigged.
And yeah, they can hack into these voting machines, and this has already been established in the United States.
Exactly.
There is a class actions. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and a colleague have actually taken action, and the state attorneys have less than 60 days now to take action. And if they don't, then Kennedy and his colleague can go ahead and prosecute the three major computer companies that are involved. Diebold is one of them, or Diebold, D-I-E-B-O-L-D.
Yes.
And of course, this apparently is, they can do this under whistleblower legislation that they happen to have in the United States, and we certainly need it in this country.
Well, so anyways, on that topic, and I just want to quickly touch on prostate cancer. Once you get diagnosed with this, most of the time by a urologist who, for self-serving reasons, will try to steer you aggressively towards surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And the options are not indicated. The other option is, of course, chemo. And number three is brachytherapy. And finally, depending on the size of the tumor, you have what is called watchful waiting. You know all those.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, there's the hormone therapy as well. And for anybody that's not sure, brachytherapy is where they take radioactive pellets and insert them into the prostate gland.
Right.
And of course, I laugh, a couple of years ago, this was heralded in Canada as a brand new technique for dealing with prostate cancer, except it had been around the United States for many years before that.
Right.
You know, but who do they think we are anyway?
But I just wanted to let your listeners know that there are instances of so-called delayed reaction of those pellets you mentioned, either because they were not aimed correctly at the gland or somewhere else, or too many were inserted. And finally, perhaps the procedure was done too early. Now, two urologists have unofficially confirmed there is a correlation between brachytherapy and the blood sugar going haywire.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you tend to become diabetic, or if you are already diabetic, well, you cannot control even with metformin, exercise, and diet. The blood sugar goes haywire, and your physician will keep on scolding you.
Mm-hmm.
And
it must be that the radiation is poisoning the pancreas that produces the insulin. That's a possibility. Certainly, the safest dose of radiation happens to be absolute zero. There is no known safe dose of radiation. The body is generally equipped to deal with what we get from the universe, as well as the background radiation of this planet. But anything over and above that has an adverse effect on the immune system, more or less depending on how well your diet is in terms of antioxidant nutrients. But speaking of prostate cancer, and I'm glad you brought it up, because it's been almost 2 years now that it was reported out of the University of Toronto and Mount Sinai Hospital that they treated 15 patients who had prostate cancer just using vitamin D3. Now, this is a vitamin D in its natural form that you can pick up in any health food store or pharmacy. And they were giving something like 3,000 micrograms, I'm sorry, 3,000 international units. 3,000 international units every day. And without exception, every one of these patients, some of them have been treated with radiation, some of them had surgery, some of them have been on hormone or chemotherapy, and without exception, the PSA, PSA.
You're right.
The PSA figures went down. This is PSA test is something that tells the physician whether or not with elevated levels you might have prostate cancer,
mm-hmm.
or maybe some other condition for that matter, because it's not all that accurate. But the PSA did go down in all cases, and the tumors started shrinking and disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just on vitamin D3, something like 3,000 to 4,000
mm-hmm.
international units a day. A product that anybody could pick up in their local health food store or pharmacy. And by the way, the thought police, you better not worry about finding me, because I don't sell D3 or any vitamin anymore for that matter. I closed my business down as of July the 31st after 35 years and 2 months working directly in the health food industry as a retailer of vitamin and herbal and other health related products.
Well, I'm sorry.
I digress.
To get that,
yeah. Well, that's the way it is. But I'm taking on a new hat. I've joined a clinic. They wanted me to come in as a counselor and consultant,
mm-hmm.
and I'm happy to do that. They recognize, I guess, the experience that I've had over the years in dealing with these issues. But in any case, dealing with this situation with Mount Sinai Hospital and the response, positive response of prostate cancer patients to vitamin D therapy, there was a similar study that had been carried out by the National Cancer Institute in the United States using vitamin D2, which is a synthetic version of vitamin D. They did not get the same results, and they had some very serious adverse reactions as a consequence. But I don't think you ever read that in your local daily newspaper.
Especially
I don't even
if it's
think
owned
it was
by Canvas.
Yeah, I don't think it was mentioned in the Globe and Mail,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't vouch for the Toronto Star because I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
But and I certainly never heard it on the CBC News. You know,
no.
Our national newscast
right.
is supposed to be the font of all that is, you know, newsworthy. But that's the way it is.
But you know, Croft, in the early 80s, in Uppsala University in Sweden, they had discovered a cure for cancer. And I know this firsthand because the pathologist at Vancouver General, who was also a lecturer at UBC School of Medicine and was an acquaintance of mine, had indicated this to me. However, the Swiss and U.S. multinational pharma companies, they killed this research, and the usual. And because the treatment, as you know, is a billion-dollar industry, and in London, England itself, there's 5,000 people working 24/7 in so-called cancer research, and nobody wants to ever find this. You know?
Well, I mean, just I mentioned it earlier in the program about this, her septum, I think that's the word. Got to have a look at it. My producer's right here. Yeah, Erbatux. That's Erbatux.
Mm-hmm.
Erbatux. Erbatux.
Mm-hmm.
$2,400 a week. Actually, I've got it mixed up with another thing, but this one, this is a drug that they're using anyways in the treatment of cancers, and not specifically breast cancer. I've had it mixed up with another drug that has me annoyed. And the only thing it does is it reduces a tumor, but it doesn't extend life or longevity. And there's the cancer drug that I was thinking of, the name escapes me, but this is for breast cancer. And it actually destroys the heart and the lungs. So what a choice. You either put up with your breast cancer, because it has been shown, by the way, way back in the 70s, Dr. Hardin Jones demonstrated. He was a medical doctor and biostatistician, and he pointed out that a woman who does nothing at all about her breast cancer, just copes with it, she has something like 11-year life expectancy,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to maybe 4 years at the most for a woman who would submit to chemotherapy, radiation, or surgery, or combination of these. And that hasn't changed since 1974. And if anything, it's even worse now because of some of these very invasive tumors and these dreadful toxic treatments that they're using. So there it is. So you're right about these are patentable and therefore profitable. But who's going to make a fortune selling vitamin D3 when you can buy a 100 or 90 to 100 1,000 international unit tablets for something like $5.95? Three a day is a month's supply. What's going to, it's just ludicrous. I was listening, reviewing an interview I did with a Dr. Brian Leibowitz, who unfortunately is now deceased, but he was a founder and editor of the Journal of Optimal Nutrition. Peer reviewed, it had 100 top scientists and physicians on the editorial board. And he pointed out to me on this interview that 1 million international units of vitamin A given every day for 30 days cleared up lung cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And serious cases of lung cancer.
Now the latest, if it's suspected that one has prostatitis, cystitis, or mm-hmm. proctitis,
mm-hmm.
you are prescribed terazosin.
Which but, is?
It supposedly relieves the pain when you have to empty the bladder if there is any infection and so on. But the adverse effects are terrible. You lose appetite, you have a constant dry mouth, and shortness of breath. But, this is not indicated. And as you know, industry doesn't like the word adverse. They just say side effects.
Yeah.
And even when you talk to the physician or the specialist, they try to correct you and say side effects.
No, they're adverse effects.
Of course. And
because,
I always say adverse effects.
Consider the dictum of the founder of medicine, Hippocrates.
Correct.
And he says, first, do no harm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the side effects that you see that are so horrendous, and they don't want to call them, they don't want to call them adverse effects. What are they doing? They're doing harm because it's bad enough the body has to cope with dealing with a disease, but to have to fight off the toxins of the therapy, it's just ludicrous. And the doctors of today sneer at the doctors of earlier centuries who were bloodletting feeding their patients arsenic and other poisons. They sneer at that, but it's not much different from what they're doing today.
But there's a lot of pressure from the pharma industry. I don't know how often each individual doctor is visited by this medical rep. But I tend to see, and I go seldom to my physician, and for some strange reason, this medical rep is sitting and waiting there to take the physician out for lunch, and I don't know what else is, given under the table, some presents or some travel tickets or whatever. But it's obvious, we didn't come down with the rain yesterday.
Well, I get these samples, which they can give out, and I wonder how much is billed to how much is given, how much they bill these things to the medical services plan when in fact they were given to them free. I am informed that the physicians mail is in packets 6 inches thick every day.
Right.
And of course, you can be sure that just about 99% of it is coming from the pharma cartels. Oh yeah, they're such great citizens. I remember there was a fire in one plant on the Rhine River in Basel, Switzerland, mm-hmm. several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the next door neighbor just upriver from the plant that was on fire took the opportunity to dump a whole bunch of pollutants into the Rhine, under cover of all the smoke, fire, and stink. And it forced all the cities and governments from the Swiss border right down to the North Sea
mm-hmm.
to shut off their freshwater intake pipes because of this toxic mess going down. That shows you what good corporate citizens these companies are. And you never read that in the likes of the Vancouver newspapers or the national newspapers. You know,
but the editorial is all dictated by the Asper family. I mean, you know, they hire and fire the editorial board, the chief editor, and this is a fact. It was in the Sun some time ago how they stagger the editorials. They start with the Ottawa Citizen,
yes.
Then they go to the Montreal Gazette, and then to Toronto, Winnipeg Free Press, Edmonton Journal, Calgary Herald. Finally, it comes here, and it goes to Victoria.
Yeah.
And and then we're told we have free press and we have freedom of speech. And if any of your listeners get hold of the Patriotic Act Part 2, I tell you they won't sleep every night. Because the U.S. security forces can come to your home and only allege that you are a potential terrorist. They don't have to accuse you. And you know the difference between alleging and accusing.
Absolutely. And this is CSIS and the RCMP in our own country.
But they don't even need CSIS and the RCMP.
Oh, no, they can use... look at what happened to Mayor Arar, although we're digressing from the healthy living topic. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, this is just as important to our rights as the right to go for alternative therapies and maintaining good health. But Mayor Arar, mm-hmm. he was returning from a holiday,
yes.
And lands at Newark, New Jersey Airport,
mm-hmm.
And is taken, has to go through customs, and they take him aside, they grill him, mm-hmm. and the next thing you know, he's on a plane to Jordan. He's put into some kind of a vehicle and escorted across the Jordanian border into Syria, where he's subjected to torture,
mm-hmm.
and then these people have the utter gall to believe what the torturers have extracted from this man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what kind of monsters have we got in our security forces, in our national police, not to mention the FBI and the CIA
and the Homeland Security.
And if people can't understand the consequences and recognize the enormity of all this and do nothing about it, then they deserve what they get.
And you see the irony, Croft, the Bush administration, they wanted to get rid of communism everywhere. That was the big bogeyman. And yet, they're adopting the ideology. For example, they want colleagues to snitch against each other, neighbors to watch each other, friends, family. That stems from communism.
And totalitarianism, because that was also the trademark of Nazism and Italian and Spanish fascism.
Well, and now they call it Secret Service. SS.
Yeah,
that's what the Nazis.
Yeah, that's right. The Secret Service is the SS. And of course, you know.
Fatherland is homeland.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So what's the difference?
Well, the scoundrels always did wrap themselves in the flag of patriotism, you know.
Sure.
And of course, we have other problems. Caller, thank you very much for coming in on the show. And
good luck, Croft.
It's always good to hear from you.
I hope you continue with the radio show.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
604-684-7561 is the number to call. This program is Dynamic Health here on CFRO-FM at 102.7 megahertz on the FM band and on cable frequencies. If you have an FM splitter for your FM receiver, then you can hear us throughout the Lower Mainland if you're out of line of sight from the transmitter, or in the Fraser Valley, the Central Interior, the Okanagan Valley, and of course on Vancouver Island. I'm Croft Woodruff, your presenter, and I invite your participation. 604-684-7561. We've got a couple of lines open. And yes.
How is a diphtheria vaccine made? Do you know?
On the diphtheria, like all these vaccines, are usually incubated in diseased tissue of some animal or another.
Right.
And as a consequence,
in this case, it's the horse.
And so what happens is they're putting foreign proteins in these vaccines into your body.
It's very hard to get information about
to
that.
And you get an immune response.
Can I read this to you?
By all means.
Describe this. It's from the California Health Digest in 1939. In the manufacture of diphtheria vaccine, they inject from 4 to 7 drops of diphtheria processed serum into the jugular vein of the horse's neck. This causes extreme sickness in the horse. After about 6 months of this procedure, they draw off about 6 pints of the horse's blood. This is allowed to stand and settle, which causes a solid part to sink to the bottom. They then take the fluid part and use it for injections. So that's what you're putting into your children.
It's got nothing to do with human anatomy or human fluids or serums or anything like that. It's coming from a creature that is quite a distant relative to a human being, albeit that horses are mammals like humans. But that's the same thing with the flu vaccine that we see every year. It's incubated in chick embryo or chicken egg. And I just find it laughable when we hear about this bird flu epidemic that just doesn't seem to get off the ground. The latest in Gullible's travels is they had 44 cases of bird flu. I think it was in Indonesia or someplace, you know, and there's a couple of cases somewhere else in some country, maybe Poland, or it's finally got to Hungary. Two cases. All they do is see some antibodies and think, because of the pattern of the antibodies, oh, it's bird flu. But it's funny, I don't see any birds with flu these days. The biggest trouble for birds right now is out at Squamish, where they're covered in bunker oil. And because of the incompetence of the maritime laws of this country not being enforced, and that these ships should be double hulled so that if the hull is ruptured, it's not going to rupture the oil tank or the bilge for that matter. But oh no. It's business as usual, and our wildlife and our estuaries have to pay the price, and we all end up by paying the price in the end. But that's the way it is. But as far as vaccines go, yeah, they incubate to the and here's the funny part of it. If the bird flu virus, well, of course, I would imagine you're going to find viruses in any creature, so birds have viruses. But from what I can understand from a researcher who is a virologist, his name escapes me for the moment, but he points out that it's very difficult for bird viruses to jump to humans. And he also mentions that the same thing goes for viruses in reptiles. Very hard to jump to humans. And he says, when it comes to monkey viruses and gorilla viruses and chimp viruses, these are the closest in terms of genetic relationship to humans, their viruses don't jump to us, although the exception is when they incubated the polio vaccine in the diseased tissues of the African green monkey and then injected the first polio shots were injected into Americans way back in the middle 1950s, 1952 and onward. And what happens, those people that receive those shots, they're developing tumors, and they find SV40, that is simian virus 40. Simian is another word for monkey. Monkey virus 40 is what we're looking at. And so obviously through genetic engineering, they've been able to introduce a monkey virus that normally would not jump from monkeys to humans. We can pick up pig viruses, and one of the reasons why is because the tissue similarity between human and pig tissue is such that that is why heart valve transplants from pigs into humans work very well. That is why humans who are diabetic, type 1 diabetics, can tolerate pork insulin because of the tissue typing is so closely matched. But now they have humalog genetically engineered insulin, and there's nothing but trouble for many, many diabetics. Let's go to the phone lines. Line 1, you're on the air.
Hi, Croft, over the years, nice to hear you again. I've been doing a lot of thinking on this gypsy moth spray, which is full of infectious agents, and they just sprayed Nanaimo 3 weeks to a month ago, the whole town of Nanaimo.
Was there anything in the papers about it?
Oh, no, of course not.
Well, that just shows you how environmentally incompetent our local newspapers are when it comes to these issues.
Deeper than that, Croft, when I was a teacher, full-time job, loved my job, went over, kicked over like a basket case, in bed for at least 3 years. Nobody told me the spray was full of funguses and mycoplasmas and streptococcus that Dr. Suzuki was earlier alluding to, genetically modified E. coli and all kinds of bacteria. Mm-hmm. And we wonder why I've got a sick population. But while the people are down for the count, as I was, and linking it to the other previous caller who talked about Nazi communism and everything here, the FBI, there's a local office here on the North Shore, another one over on, I believe it's Pender and Hastings there, they are getting into bank accounts, and worse than that, getting into wills and estates, and now using hazmat teams without search warrants, they can force drugs and injections. And it's deeper than that. An old Masonic warhorse I ran into the other day tells me that we are officially communist in Canada.
Well, may I interrupt for a minute, caller? May I interrupt for a moment?
Well, we deserve what we get. Hello.
I'm just trying to tell you this, that This is totalitarianism. It doesn't matter if it's communism or fascism or whatever ism you want to call it. It is totalitarianism where you have no rights and you are totally subservient to the state and those who are calling the tunes in the terms of running the state, whether it happens to be communist, whether it happens to be corporate enterprise, or just ultra-conservative fascists.
Yes, exactly, Croft. And when Canadians don't care, I've talked to so many people, and they don't care, they don't know history, we're a young country and we're already losing it. They don't understand or really care to understand European history. They don't want to discuss the U.S. Patriot Fascist II Act. We're not allowed to discuss it on mainstream radio. Six radio stations have been taken over, you may or may not know.
Oh, I'm well aware of it, which, by the way, is monopolistic in its scope and intent.
Uh-huh.
And, and of course, so we can blame the regulators in Ottawa, but who appoints them, the people that we vote for. But in any case, what we are facing is corporatism and globalism. These are the new isms instead of fascism or communism. It's globalism at the behest of corporatism. And it's the corporations that rule. I've got to move along. I've got another call waiting. I've got to move along. Thank you. Thank you for the call. Line 2, you're on the air. And by the way, we have a line open if somebody wants to join in. 604-684-7561. Go ahead, caller. I'm sorry.
Yes, hello. I'm very interested in your show. I quite frequently listen to it, and I can say, I guess, 99% of it I agree or know about already, and every now and then there's a nice nugget in there for me as well. I am faced, and that is my question, lately with the problem of having some kind of problem with my prostate or my bladder. I don't know. And it is very hard to take. And I got your vitamin D3 idea. I was wondering if you could also recommend anything else.
What I'm going to suggest, caller, is this is something I can't go into in a specific way on the air. But I'm going to suggest that you make a call to 604-421-1951 and ask to make an appointment with me.
Okay.
Yeah. There should be somebody there to take your call. If not, phone that number tomorrow. I should be there.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
But thank you very much for the call.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. And 604-684-7561. We have a line open if you wish to join in the program. And we'll go to line 2. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Croft.
Good afternoon.
Yes, I'm totally against white sugar, but I realize that it's so easy for people to consume it without really thinking. So I was thinking, would it be possible to put juice machines into our schools and colleges and universities and give people a nice fresh cup of juice or vegetable juice for their lunches and recesses?
Well, it would make a lot of sense, but then, of course, as you know, our education system is starved for funds every year, and I would suggest that such an investment probably would end up by cutting down the number of absentees and colds and other related illnesses that also cost the system money. But it was much more profitable to put in Coke machines and other pop machines and candy machines in our schools, for which the school board would get a commission from, and that's the way it has been. Although I understand in some school boards are changing that policy and trying to persuade the acceptance of whole foods for and nutritious foods for lunch or recess snacks or whatever. And of course, a school lunch program has been shown to be of great benefit to children in the inner cities in North America, and how their learning standards, their education standard goes way up thanks to better nutrition. Because when your blood sugar is down, the brain is starved, and the brain happens to work on blood sugar. It shuts down, and you can't be attentive. You cannot keep awake. You cannot learn when your brain is fogged like that. And as far as white sugar goes, well, there are substitutes. Maple syrup, which, of course, is very pricey, is one natural sweetener that will not raise your blood sugar level. And, of course, another one happens to be, well, this is a stevia. This is from a herb that grows in the Central Americas, and a very, very small amount is to be used. Now, I understand some people say it has leaves a bitter aftertaste. I haven't run into that, but it's certainly worth looking into. But yes, I think you make a very good point. Why not have not only machines that dispense fresh fruit and vegetable juices, but why not have a fruit stall that offers apples, fresh apples and pears and peaches and whatever that is in season. It would be a great boon. Cross? And, of course, we would be encouraging the children to take these things.
Cross, what about the machines that you actually squeeze the apple juice right out of? Those are the machines I'm talking about.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, by the way, you should know that according to Abram Hoffer, Canada's foremost orthomolecular physician, who's written over 30 books. He's published over 600 papers. And he says this, that all addictions stem from our addiction to sugar. Thank you very much for the call. And let's see what else have we got here to mention. Other than the fact that you are listening to CFRO-FM at 102.7 on the FM band, the program is Dynamic Health. And of course, we are coming up to the hour and the end of the program, and unfortunately that noise means that we've got a problem with
please
the phone.
Hang up and try your call again.
Not on
if
your
like
tin type operator.
Please dial 0 and a TELUS operator will be happy to help you.
Now that we've got rid of that, that's about the only good thing you'll ever hear from TELUS, I guess. Anyway, there it is, and it is coming up to 1 minute to the hour of 2 o'clock, and I'm Crawford. Thank you for listening. Thank you for participating, and hope to be with you this time next week at 1 o'clock. And in the meantime, if you want to contact me about issues relative to health and that sort of thing, you can contact me 604-421-1951. Thank you for...
We're just going to play a little bit of music. I guess that's a half an hour, so bear with us, please.